Mike Podcast, Mental Health for the Culture.
We address real life topics and brainstorm real solutions.
This podcast is meant to be informational and not to serve as a personal counseling session. If you feel that you have some
Hey, Nedra.
Hey, Kendra.
We are now coming back with our Pack Light podcast, but we have a few changes to discuss, right?
Yes, we do.
So in the past episodes, our first round, episode 1 through 23, we did short episodes where we discussed a mental health topic that is related to pop culture, and we gave a Pack Light tip. But now we're changing it from doing that once a week to doing that
Once a month,
right. So then along with that comes what?
We're going to change the format. So tell them the new format, Kendra.
Oh, okay. I was letting you do it.
You got it all over there written down, outlined. Tell them.
That's true. I did outline it. So our new format is going to be a 45-minute show. We'll say 45 to 50 minutes to give us some wiggle room there.
We will let the spirit lead us.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing that once a month. And we have some additional segments we're adding into that format. So now we're going to be talking about some hot topics, as we discussed in previous
Please
episodes.
Please don't call them hot topics.
I am a Wendy Watcher. I'm Please a Wendy don't. Watcher, so hot
things
topics.
Things in the news. The first thing. We'll be talking about things in the news.
But doesn't hot topics just kind of like
No, it doesn't. It doesn't do
all
anything.
That really well. Mm. And that's not even a Wendy original. I mean, that's from, as she has said, The View. But okay. So we're going to be talking about things in the news for a few minutes. Then we're going to discuss things that we're both watching or reading or listening to for the next month. And, for the current month, we're going to be talking about things that we're watching, listening to, reading. And that's going to be for a few minutes. And we can maybe make some recommendations there because we're both couch potatoes, podcast potatoes.
Did you call me a pothead? Pod head. P-O-D head.
Oh, that's a good one, though.
A pothead?
Pothead. Yeah. Pothead, couch potatoes. And then we're going to talk about our mental health topic of the day, where we're going to still continue to give you a Pack Light tip. And then that's it. We're going to close it out. So that's 45 minutes once a month that will maybe just give you a nice, well-rounded dose of mental health and pop culture that you don't have to try to keep up with every single week. All right.
Let's get started.
First, in the news, so R. Kelly came out with a
19-minute song,
a new 19-minute song, and it is called I Admit It,
mm-hmm.
And he is admitting things.
Mm-hmm. So we already know.
So you've heard the song, right?
I listened to the song. I was a little hesitant because I did listen to like maybe 5 or 6 of the Trapped in the Closets. And I thought that was my commitment to listening to long.
Yeah. 5 or 6 out of 30. It ended up being 20 something videos.
I thought I paid my debt. So I was like, you know, I don't want to listen. But I was like, you know what? People keep asking me about it. I'm going to listen to it. So I listened.
You did. And Nedra always pays her debts. To R.
Yes.
Kelly.
That's oh.
That's a
strike that from throwback. The strike that from the record. Yeah, I don't even watch Game of Thrones. I don't know what that means.
I know that's,
none of what you just said is true.
If you watch Game of Thrones, you recognize the phrasing "A Lannister always pays their debts."
Oh,
so, since
okay.
You said you had paid your debt watching 5 out of the 30 Trapped in the Closets. Okay, anyway, back to the 19-minute song.
Oh gosh,
what did you think about it?
I thought it was long.
19 minutes.
19. But you know what? I didn't get bored because every 1 or 2 minutes there was like some, oh, yeah, he didn't know how to read and he signed that document. Or, oh, yeah, he did, you know, he did have that interview with so-and-so and he didn't talk and I guess this is why now. So it was like an interview of sorts for 19 minutes. And I think in a song he said the best way for him to get stuff out is to sing it.
That's
versus
true.
Talking to someone about it.
He definitely is not a very good interviewer.
Right.
On camera. Now, Wendy did say that she went and he called her for an interview, summoned her more or less, and They talking about some things. She asked some questions. He answered. He said all sorts of things. And that's what he refers to in the 19-minute songs, that interview.
Correct.
But that interview is not taped. It's not recorded. So it's not something that we're going to see.
Right.
And she's not talking about it because he hasn't given clearance to talk about it. So,
right, right.
Yeah. And then there was another interview that was kind of a disaster with Torre.
With Torre. It was about, like, have you had sex with underage girls or young girls? And he was like, what's young?
What's young? What's underage?
What's underage?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to discuss that. Like, I mean, that interview was kind of a disaster. He was very defensive. Excuse me. But he sat down for it. So anyway. So he is airing off some things, but not.
So what happens with celebrities is, you know, their people will give you, like, look, this is what this person is willing to talk about. And there, you know, there are some journalists, some interviewers who will go rogue. And they're like, you know what? The people want to know.
Right.
Are you sleeping? And he's like, whoa.
Let me throw you this curveball.
Yeah. And he's like, whoa. I didn't say I was talking about that. I'm talking about this album.
That's true.
I'm talking about this clothing line, whatever those things are. So I'm not answering that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes the celebrities look bad. I mean, I've seen it with, you know, multiple celebrities. They're like, I'm not talking about that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I kind of view this song as like an update to his autobiography. You know, the autobiography was talking about some things in his past and his life. He has said how he has difficulty with reading. He can't read. I mean, of course he can read something, but to what degree, you know, what level he is at, I don't know what grade level he reads at.
And I think reading and comprehension is different. And that's what he talked about in that song. Like, he turned over, I guess he sold the rights to all of his older hits.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not reaping, you know, any financial benefit.
Oh,
and so
really?
And so he's getting, you know, he's like, that's why I tour all the time, because I have rent to pay. And we saw it in the news.
So that means we can listen. We can listen with a
clear conscience.
A clear conscience to his older music. And like, he's I'm not supporting R. Kelly at this point.
Right. You're supporting BMG at this point. No, I don't know who you're supporting, but he said he turned over everything. But I thought with the song, he didn't really admit stuff that we weren't already aware of, and he didn't really talk about, you know, the incident with him urinating on the young girls. He didn't really say yes or no, I was married to
and
Aaliyah.
He probably never will.
So the sexual situations, he didn't really dig in deep other than to say, like, you know, yes, I like women and they hit on me a lot and, you know, I indulge in those interactions. He did say this, and I don't know who he was referring to because I don't follow all these stories too much, but he did say that there was, I guess, one person, one accuser, where her dad brought her to the concert and was, like, pumping the girl on to, like, get with R. Kelly and then later sued R. Kelly for being inappropriate. And he was like, you know, something about, you know, let's be clear, like, her dad, like, pushed this interaction, which I thought was interesting. I've certainly been to some concerts that I do not deem as child appropriate, and I would say that, you know, if a child is at an R. Kelly concert, it's very inappropriate because of the, you know, the stuff he does on stage, and, you know, just some other folks, and so, and I'm not saying, like, oh, gosh, they, you know, I think parents, you know, you have to be mindful. Like, even, you know, like, even with a Michael Jackson, it's like, who's letting their kid go over there for a sleepover?
Right.
So it's like, you know.
And well, okay, so with that said, of R. Kelly is not age appropriate for children.
Not at all.
How old were you at your first R. Kelly concert?
Ooh. I will not answer that on the grounds that
it could incriminate your mama.
It could incriminate my dad.
I was in high school when I went to my first R. Kelly concert.
I think you need to be 30, like, out of his scope.
Like, I know. I was
30 and up concert.
I was a young
tender.
Yeah. If only he had seen me way up in the nosebleed section. I had a pretty good seat. But yeah, I think I was in high school and it was with LL Cool J. That was a very sexual concert.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
LL was doing some things.
He was doing it at that time.
Doing it well.
And doing it well. So.
And then R. Kelly with the see-through pants. But, yeah, I was in high school. So, I mean, that's kind of age appropriate because, you know, high school is when you are getting into the sexual music.
That's when you're seeming like you're ready.
Right. You do seem like you're ready in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the whole R. Kelly thing is definitely no laughing matter. And I completely understand all right. those folks who are muting R. Kelly.
Right.
And, you know, not listening to his music. Yeah. Because I think that, I mean, and I guess the admitted song, he didn't really admit that he was an abuser. He just admitted
because
that
his ex-wife, right, Andrea Kelly, right. just came out recently saying that he physically and sexually abused her during their marriage.
But do we expect an abusive person to say that they're abusive? You know, like, maybe, because what, I don't think we would want to think of ourselves as a bad person.
Right.
So how can you say, like, oh, yeah, I'm always mean to people? It's like, no, you're going to be like, I'm a nice person. So yes. it's like, I didn't have expectations for the song. Like, I wasn't right. like, oh, he's about
What's
to
he
say.
Revealing?
It was just like him singing about the stuff we already know and throwing in some tidbits about.
An update to his autobiography.
Like, oh, I'm broke and that's why I tour and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But nothing like, I'm admitting these things that nobody knows. He admits that he doesn't have money or something. But yeah. So that's enough on R. Kelly.
The next segment is, this month, I'm into, and we're going to talk about what we're reading or watching or listening to currently. So, Nedra, you are always reading, watching, listening to all the things, but what's something that you feel like is extra special right now?
Extra special?
Yeah, what you want to mention.
I've been listening, of course, to podcasts. My favorite podcast right now is Hidden Brain. I listen to Hidden Brain. I don't listen to all of them. So I kind of like with my podcast, because I listen to so many podcasts, I will go through and like look at the topic and see if that's something I want to hear. So I listen to Hidden Brain. I listen to, of course, Fresh Air.
What is Hidden Brain about?
Hidden Brain is kind of like these psychology spins on common thing. So it's kind of like if you're into Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote like Tipping Point, and he also has a podcast, but yes. Tipping Point and Blink and those sorts of things, I think you will like this podcast, because it takes this, you know, fundamental concept and it gives it a psychology sort of spin. So and if you hear any bell ringing in the background, that's Sunny, Kendra's dog. He's rude. Anyways.
He's contributing.
He's being rude.
He's contributing. Maybe he's shaking in support of your podcast choice.
He needs to be
in timeout. He likes podcasts too. I think he wants to go out, so that's why he's coming to get my attention. I'll let him out in a second. All right, so anything else that you're listening to or watching or reading that you want to discuss or mention?
Listening to, watching, or reading. So I'm reading like 2 novels right now. I've started listening to books on Audible. I have been using Hoopla, which I'm still using Hoopla, which is free through the library in Charlotte. So I love Hoopla, but I've started using Audible. And I'm reading through 2 novels right now. I don't want to give up the titles yet because I'm still iffy as to whether they're good books.
Oh.
you know, I need somebody to like something to happen in the first chapter, and these are not those books to grab me.
You don't like a slow build.
I don't like a slow build. I'd rather you just like give it to me and then bring me down like this is how the murder happened sort of thing. Like, oh. So I'm still reading these books, and okay. if I deem them appropriate, I will let you guys know what that title is.
All right. So something that I'm reading, or I just finished reading, is the Jennifer Lewis book, The Mother of Black Hollywood. Like Nedra said, I do a lot of audiobooks, and she read her audiobooks. So hearing it in her voice literally was very interesting. Jennifer Lewis is an actress who you've seen in some of everything. She has been in movies. She's been on TV.
Currently. She was Tina Turner mama.
She's been everybody's
she
mama.
That's why her everybody's book is mama. Called
The Mother of Black Hollywood. Mm-hmm. She is Dre's mama on Black-ish right now. Yes, she was Tina Turner's mama. She was Will Smith's Aunt Helen on The Fresh Prince. So she has had so many roles, and so her book is about her life. She actually started off in Broadway because she is a very strong singer, and you can hear that. She'll sing in some of her different acting jobs. But singer, dancer, actress, now activist, and just talking about her issues and dealing with bipolar. She had bipolar behaviors that she didn't understand, that other people didn't understand for years. And she didn't get diagnosed until she was in her early 30s.
Yep, and she was very promiscuous.
Yes, leading up until then. So,
yeah. Which is typical that. With folks with bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm.
Is it the promiscuity or is it the overindulging in something?
Overindulging in something. So it could be promiscuity. It could be gambling. It could be shopping. It could be eating. Drugs and alcohol. It could be any of those things. It's like that manic phase where you feel, it makes you feel like really good. You get like, you know, a rush from it. So
And she discussed how the rush of stage, being on stage, especially with live shows, being on stage was such a high, such a rush, she would want to continue that. And she got into a habit of continuing that with a man. Mm-hmm, so that's kind of how she, and then being on tour, traveling around, you know, you can't, she had some long-term relationships in there. She discusses that. So the book was really good. I would recommend it. And then something
that's
else.
That's on my list.
That's on your list?
Yep, that's on my list.
I can give you access if you want to my Audible.
I got that plug.
Oh, yeah. And then I just finished watching Black Lightning. It's a TV show on CW, and it's about a black superhero, a family of black superheroes, in a fictional place called Freeland, but it's kind of, the way they describe it is kind of like Ferguson or Oakland, California, like a mostly black community that has had more prominence and has also gone through the 60s and the 70s, the turbulent time of that with civil rights and, you know, just the black community now and this black superhero providing hope. But just like, you know, all things, a superhero sometimes can be the villain and can be the actual hero. So it's pretty interesting. It's cute. It's cute. Like,
how
I like it.
How many seasons is it?
Right now, the second one is airing. So I watched on Netflix just the first season. Yeah.
Okay.
Which was kind of long for a new season, but
what is the storyline like? Like, I don't really do comic book stuff, but if it's a good storyline,
yeah.
I'll watch it.
So it has a little element of government cover-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 60s and the 70s, the government sent agents to this town because it was a hotbed of anxiety, of anger and frustration. So they did this experimental drug. And to maybe to try to make the people more docile, like they were the experimental town for this drug, to make them more docile. So instead, that created metahumans with superpowers. You know, experimental drugs, how they go wrong. And so it kind of plays into how black people have said in real life for centuries, and it has been true, actually, how we've been experimented on by the government with different vaccinations and stuff like that. So it kind of talks...
Oh, I got to talk about the Purge that I went to see, because it's kind of about this. Go ahead.
So, yeah, so that, and then, so the Black Lightning is a regular man who is one of those humans created during that time with the government experimental vaccinations. And he has a wife. They've separated. I mean, he's also been out of the superhero game. He retired because it was too hard on him and his family. He had young girls. But now, because of some things happening in the town, he has had to get back into it. So it's just showing him, you know, kind of torn between, I need to be a father and a husband, but also I got to get out here in these streets and be a superhero and give these people hope and try to crush these bad guys when I can. And
I like how you said, I got to get in those streets to be a superhero.
I know. Usually, I got to get in those streets. It's not followed by to be a superhero. That's true. The juxtaposition.
I got to get in these streets.
I got to get in these streets and slang this hope.
And say these people.
Right. Exactly. Slay these bad guys. So it's pretty interesting to watch. And, you know, I like to see, I don't get into superhero stuff too much and comic book things too much. But I did want to check it out because it is a black superhero and see what the storyline it is. And there is plenty of personal storyline, historical storyline, superhero storyline, and things like that.
So one of the things that I'm watching right now is The Affair, which comes on Showtime.
Okay.
And this, I think it's in its fourth season, And the show is about the title, The Affair. So, mm-hmm. you know, it starts with someone having an affair, and it seems like every season, you know, one of the characters has, like, a different affair or something like that.
Oh,
but what okay. I really love about this show is told from the perspective of four people. And so they'll, like, retell the story from the other person's perspective, and it's always something a little different, like how that person said something to you or how that interaction went. And it's so interesting because it makes me think about, like, wow, we really perceive stuff very different from how it happens. And I don't know, it never really tells you, like, this is what actually happened, but it definitely shows you, like, our perception of things is so different than, you know, this other person's interaction with us. So, as I said, it's on its fourth season. It's a really good show. Like, if you have, like, Showtime, the app, or the channel, you could probably go back and watch the other seasons. But it's with, gosh, I don't know any of these
Pacey
actors' names.
Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, that guy. Pacey Whitaker. I didn't know his name. And then one of the guys, he used to be on The Wire.
The Wire, yep.
I don't know his name.
His real name is Dominic something.
That's probably it. I think I've seen that somewhere. So yes, those folks are on that show. But yes, look it up, The Affair. It is so good. I love
it. Is it? Yeah.
Can somebody else please watch this show with me? Like,
I know.
I don't know
anybody else who watches
alone because I don't know anybody who watches.
Well,
I'm gonna find a message board online.
I'll get access to Showtime.
Okay.
And then I'll watch it.
Thank you.
Because Showtime has some other shows that I've really enjoyed, like Shameless.
Billionaire.
Okay.
Shameless.
Shameless. I liked Master of Sex until it
Master
went off.
Master of Sex.
Nurse Jackie. Great
show. I'm just repeating everything
shows.
Because they're great.
They are, yeah. And I do want to see that episode of Sacha Baron Cohen's show where he got the government, the senator to do all these racist, stupid acts.
Oh, I didn't.
And he did it.
Oh, I don't know about that.
All right. Well, let's jump back to in the news. Sacha Baron Cohen, who is that comedian guy, Borat?
Uh-huh.
You know, he has a sketch comedy show or something on Showtime. And he got, I forgot his name, but he's a senator or a governor somewhere, some politician from Georgia, to come on his show. He told him all kind of stories about, hey, oh, he was his Borat character, which means mm-hmm. that he was doing the accent and the look. And he said he was some kind of terrorist prevention specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the guy, look, in case you're ever kidnapped by, you know, Muslim extremists, you need to draw attention to yourself by saying such certain things, like getting loud in public. Think of, there's an N-word that here in America is the most offensive N-word. It's the worst word you could say. You have to yell that word out loud. So let's practice now. If you get captured by Muslim extremists or whoever, yell that word out. The guy yells out, "Ner, ner," like the N-I-G-G-E-R word out loud. He just says it. Ah! And then the guy's like, "Whoa, that word is terrible. I was thinking the word is noonie." That's a terrible word. Whoa, you are a monster. Meanwhile, so this is recorded, right? The guy has signed off.
Did he get in trouble for this?
He has had to resign recently.
Are you
yes.
serious?
Yes.
Oh,
he
my
did
gosh.
So many other things. He impersonated, I think, a Chinese
oh,
person.
No.
Because it's like, the guy fed him these stories. Borat. Fed him these stories saying, okay, so if you are kidnapped in this situation or to prevent this kind of terrorist outbreak, you're going to have to do this. Let's practice. He did an offensive Chinese accent. He did the N-word. He pulled his pants down and walked around backwards. I mean, all these things because he believed everything this guy was telling him. It's all recorded. It was a part of his show.
Oh, my gosh.
So what that means is that the guy that robbed somebody, I got to look it up, but you can look it up. People can look it up. But what it means is that he felt like it was okay to do all these things mm-hmm. on camera and gave the clearance. Like, you know, you got to sign waivers for stuff to be released and to be recorded and seen. And he felt like all these things were okay to sign a waiver to do it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then did it all on camera. So, yeah, but he has resigned.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Now, let's get to our mental health topic of the day. We are talking about, all right, so parental grieving of a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is what I've heard to be the worst loss worst loss that anyone could go through, you know, especially a mom. But, I mean, not to discount dads and in their needs for grieving a child.
You did just discount dads. Yeah.
Well, that's why I corrected not to discount them. So, let's just say...
Parents. Okay.
Grieving of a child, the worst loss that you could have because it's the most unnatural, you know? Right. Children are supposed to lose their parents and grieve them.
Right.
Not the other way around. Mm-hmm. So... The show Power has recently been, that's a part of the storyline, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really watch Power.
I'm like, do you not know this?
I know what's going on. I know what's going on in the show because I watch and listen to so many outlets that discuss it, but I don't actually watch Power.
Okay. So, yes, at the end of last season, Ghost and Tasha, their daughter, was killed, you know, because of all of this
gang life. Street life, drug life.
Not gang life, but yeah, well, street life.
I mean, isn't it kind of a gang?
You can't just go around calling people gangbangers.
Okay, cartel.
Okay, so
it's drugs.
The street life that she was caught in the crossfire and she, you know, she was killed. And so this season kind of shows Ghost and Tasha and them trying to get on with life, but also dealing with this loss. And for Tasha, she seems very depressed, like sitting in her daughter's room, laying in the bed crying, unable to get up, not putting on her makeup, which she usually does, not engaging in interactions. And Ghost is kind of like, you know, we got to, you know, let's do something in honor of her. Let's keep going. We got to, you know, we got to make these moves and all of this stuff. And it's just very interesting to see the difference in how they're sort of managing. It does come to a point, I think the last episode, where Ghost did have a breakdown, but he blamed it on Tasha. So it's just very interesting to see the different ways that they are coping with the loss of their child. And I think sometimes when this sort of loss happens, there is some sort of blame. Like, this person was responsible, or you shouldn't be feeling, you know, this way for this long, and these sorts of things. So the show is doing a very good job right now of just showing the process of, you know, parents who have lost a child.
Mm-hmm. So, that's interesting. Well, I mean, it is interesting. And
is it going to make you watch the show?
No. Oh. If I get access to Stars, I don't have cable, so I have to get access to these cable channels and premium cable channels through friends. And so if I get access to Stars, then perhaps I will watch. You know, I did watch Power. I watched the first three seasons, and it was interesting. It was good. I liked it. But you know what kind of turned me off to Power is 50 Cent. Like, his offline, online, on Instagram and everything, his interactions, he's so immature and petty, and he kind of gets on my nerves. So
that's just one part of his brain, though. The other part of his brain is like this, you know, an actor. You know, he does music well.
Producing
a great
show.
Yes,
that's very
true. You know, putting his money in the vitamin water. I mean, there are other parts of his brain, but there is a petty part. I hope it's the smallest part.
That petty part, nah.
It's
that
the biggest
petty part,
part
is enlarged.
He has
his brain.
Enlarged petty.
Mm-hmm. Petty campus. It's next to his hippocampus. But no, so then, like I said, since I don't have cable anyway, it's like, okay, when Power starts up next season, you know, let's get access to it and then watch it. And just never really did it. And I never was really driven to do it. But anyway, with all
it's
that
a good
said,
show.
It is a good show. And I enjoyed watching the first three seasons. But now I kind of don't have to watch it because so many people that I know and follow and read and listen to watch it and talk about it.
That's
so,
how I feel about reality shows. It's like all the information is online. I don't have to watch that.
You can find a show recap easy. Yeah. But it does remind me of things like that 7 Seconds documentary on Netflix. Or was it a show? I think it was a limited show.
It was a limited show on Netflix. Is that where the
Regina
cop was?
King.
No. No, not. Was Regina King in that?
Yes.
I watched it. Okay, so I watched so much stuff, I forget what I watched. So I watched 7 Seconds, but I don't remember Regina King in there. I do remember there was like an attorney and she had an issue with alcohol. Is that the show?
Nah, I actually only watched 3 episodes of it.
Okay,
but
we don't know about this
It
show.
Was basically about a parent grieving the loss of her child and trying to get that, you know, whole case worked through in the investigation to show that he wasn't the one in the wrong doing. He wasn't the one who was actually doing wrong when he got killed. That's what they were trying to say.
Yes. This is the show. The attorney did have an issue with alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the show I'm thinking of.
So, and Regina King was the kid's mama.
Sure. Yeah. If you say so.
She's now becoming the mother of Black Hollywood. I mean, she's like mom's character. She plays that character in a couple things recently.
Typecast.
Yeah. Well, hey, she's a great actress, though.
She is.
Yeah. So that's about parent grief. So, and then, you know, my own personal experience with it is in my family, my uncle was killed. And I never met him. It was before I was born. Mm-hmm. But from what I've learned, my grandma, that was her child. And, you know, again, you're not supposed to lose a child. Mm-hmm. And then depending on how you lose them, I think maybe can kind of color your grief a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But from what they've said, my grandma was never the same. After my uncle died. And so this being in a time, a Black family in the time of the 70s, when it happened, you know, mental health, self-care help was a little bit different, if not difficult to find. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she got all of the support or as much support as she needed in dealing with that grief. You know, my mom, my aunt and uncle were there as much as they could, my grandfather. But, you know, she, like I said, she was never the same after losing my uncle. So, like, this is a very powerful grief that is, you know, of all the different types of people that you will lose in your life and, you know, grieve and mourn. Mm-hmm. It's a very different type of grief.
How did they say your grandmother changed?
She wasn't as happy.
So she was depressed.
Overall, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. As happy overall. She did have a breakdown. And we've discussed in a previous episode of
what a breakdown is. Right.
But she had what was described as a breakdown. Just not wanting to participate in activities or experiences with the family that normally she did. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, like kind of like what Tasha was doing, like not putting on her makeup. My grandma was like makeup queen. Like that was her thing. She never went out without her makeup. Mm-hmm. And that didn't interest her to put herself together in that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's depression, like losing you know, interest in things that you would enjoy, crying, being sad, not, you know, sleeping all day or not sleeping at all or, you know, weight fluctuations, those sorts of things. So,
and that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, of course, you got to go through that process. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that may have kind of helped her to pull herself out of that state of her grief is my uncle did have two young daughters. Mm. And so, you know, he had something left, you know, of him on this planet. And honestly, I think that maybe the birth of your girl over here probably kind of helped her.
Your girl being who?
Me. In 1981. But no, just having new grandchildren and that regeneration of life, in the family, you know. Because my cousins, my uncle's two kids, they were moved away. So she wasn't able to interact with them regularly, even though they were, you know, her son's kids. But yeah, just having grandkids and, you know, time.
You know, I could think of so many movies that kind of highlight the loss of a child. I think one is Rabbit Hole with Nicole Kidman. There's a movie on Netflix with Jennifer Aniston. I cannot remember the name of it. And then Collateral Beauty with Will Smith talks about the loss of a child. And that movie is really interesting because he's like this big exec and he's successful and, you know, he loses his child and he completely detaches from life. Like he goes to work every day, but he like sets up puzzles. Like he's not doing any work. The company is suffering. Like everybody around him is trying to get him help. And, you know, eventually, you know, he's able to accept it because for most of the movie, he doesn't even acknowledge that's what happened. So by the end of the movie, he does, and he's, you know, able to accept and sort of, you know, I don't know if you move on. I think it's something that you live with. Mm-hmm. So he's able to live with it, you know, in a better way and be more functional. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could think of, I can't remember the name of the movie with Jennifer Aniston, but I think it was, have you seen it?
No.
It's on Netflix, for sure, but
is it a recently made movie?
It is recently made, but I may have watched it like maybe a year or two ago. It wasn't this year.
Oh, okay.
And so she's, you know, she's a mom. She lost her child, and she goes on this like promise. Go ahead.
Yeah, didn't she? She got into a car accident, so she had back injury and a lot of pain.
Yes, maybe. And she's like sleeping with young men or something.
Yeah, because in that car accident, she lost the kid got killed, and she broke her back or something. So
yeah, maybe. And it seems like her husband is trying to get her to come out of, but she leaves him. Like, she abruptly leaves him, and she goes, and she lives on her own. And, of course, she finds somebody who helps her to, like, come out of it, and she's able to accept it. But I think through the whole movie, like, she never really talked about the loss. Again, she didn't look at any pictures of him. She was, like, in this complete state of, you know, kind of being paralyzed and catatonic in some ways and denial.
And using that loss of the child, but also her physical pain as kind of her reason for why she is the way she is now.
Right. That's it. That's the movie. Cake.
Yeah. She baked cakes.
I don't know about that.
She did make a cake. I mean, it's called cake, but she
you might have made that.
She did make a cake. She made a really good chocolate cake. I think that was a part of her whole thing, but she hadn't done it since the accident. Okay.
I didn't see.
But then somebody got her.
This is why I like the affair. This goes back to the affair. Like, see the different things that we're getting from this? Like, I don't remember anything about this cake, even though that's the title of it.
Right.
And you're like, she baked it, and you have that clear memory of this chocolate cake, and I'm like, no, that's
because
not
that was a part of her baking the cake. Was a part of the, it was symbolic. It was a part of her coming out of that state of grief and depression.
I thought it was when her husband sent her a picture of the kid and she put it on the wall. That to me was her.
Wow, yeah, we do remember two different things. I don't remember that at all. Okay, so yeah, we just looked it up, and yeah, it is cake, and I have seen it. She did have chronic pain, and then she sought out a widower whose wife had killed herself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, there was a part of it was like, I'm feeling like my old self again. I have hope. I'm going to make that chocolate cake. And I think that's what it was. She hadn't made the cake because her child loved it. And so since the accident, she just refused to ever bake it again or something like that. And then she made the cake for somebody. Maybe the guy, maybe another kid in her life. Did he have a kid?
I don't remember all the details. I don't want to tell these people false things about this movie. Well, watch the movie. It's called Cake.
It came out in 2014. It's on Netflix. And it was really good. I do remember that.
And we'll put all this stuff in the show notes. But
yeah, lots of recommendations.
Lots of recommendations this episode. But I can't remember all the details of that. But yes, I think, you know, dealing with the loss of a child is, you know, extremely difficult for most parents. And I think the ways in which people grieve is very different. I've even seen that when folks have a miscarriage, that, you know, there is a difference in how maybe the mother or the father. And it, you know, I think sometimes we like to typecast how people grieve. Like, women will feel this way and men will feel that way. And sometimes it's not like that. You know, it really depends on, you know, that person's personality and their, you know, coping skills and all of these sorts of things. But, you know, I think that's a big parental grief as well. You know, losing the birth of a child,
right,
like the possibility
of, yeah, the hope of giving birth to a new life.
And I think you see that with Jay-Z and Beyonce. I think Jay-Z has talked about that a little bit, like having to see Beyonce have a miscarriage and, you know, the pain that it caused her. I can't remember what song he talks about that in, but
and that may be viewed differently for men and for women, because, you know, the thought or thinking about the stages of life is that men don't attach to and connect with the baby when the baby is still a fetus in the belly, you know?
But it's they not connect the to baby's, the hope of a baby.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They do connect to
so,
the hope
yeah,
of a baby.
So the more like black and white thinking, I think, has been, well, men don't really connect and attach to a baby until it's a baby out in this world. So they don't have the same connection to grieve in a certain kind of way as women. But like you said, yeah, they do attach to the hope of having a baby, especially if they have a whole big thing about a son and they're having a son. Like they're attached to the idea of making plans about all the things you're going to do, which usually with men, it seems to involve throwing around balls like baseballs and basketballs and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I never, I don't know. I haven't heard guys say, oh, I can't wait till I have a little boy. You know, we're going to paint. We're going to, like, well, I love pottery.
Have you ever talked to an artist?
Maybe. Who's having a baby?
Yeah, an artist who's musician. Having a baby. He may say that.
Musician, but not an artist. Yeah,
like
in
Mo Better Blues. He couldn't wait to show his son how to, you know, play the saxophone. He was an artist. So, yeah, that's a little different. But, yeah, we digress.
But it also, like, in mentioning Game of Thrones again, excuse me, which you, unfortunately for you, do not watch. But one of the main characters, Cersei, now she is portrayed as a villain, but really she's portrayed as a mother who will do anything for her kids. Mm-hmm. So that does, she does do some very villainous actions, you know, as far as betraying this person, co-conspiring with that person. It's all to elevate her kids and preserve her kids. And unfortunately, it's all for naught because fulfilling a prophetess's warnings when she was a kid, mm-hmm. she's going to have three kids. Mm-hmm. She's going to lose them all.
Well, actually, you know, one of my life goals is to watch Game of Thrones.
Oh.
So,
Game of Thrones or Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones. I think I'm going to watch it this year, like, seriously, because people mention so many things about
2018?
This. 2018.
Okay.
Because it comes back, like, 2019.
2019 for the last season.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to get to Game of Thrones this year.
I think you should. We are currently rewatching it.
Oh.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, so the first round is 8 seasons, and then mm-hmm. season 9 is coming back, but first seasons are like a full, it's technically 8 seasons be total. That's what mm-hmm. it'll be because the 8th season was only 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes back to season 9, I think that's only going to be 7. So that's not, those are not 2 full seasons. But anyway, it's a lot to watch and there is a lot in the storyline. And then, you know, those British accents, sometimes it takes me a while to kind of tune my ear to understand what's going on. But there's a lot going on. And so in the first watch, I can say I was not committed to it until the 3rd season, the big event in 3rd season. Then I was invested and committed to the show. And then doing research into it and everything. But now on the second watch, oh, so many things make sense now. Mm-hmm. So I would just recommend that it may take a little bit, a few episodes to get into, which you don't like, but a few episodes to get into it. But go to GameOfThronesWiki.com or whatever for some of the backstory and information. But rewatching it is where the magic happens.
And this has a lot to do with grief?
Yes. Well, because everybody dies on that show. Oh. And so a lot of parents do lose their kids, and you do see different types of grief. You know, one parent, one guy loses his son, and, you know, he's like, somebody's got to pay for this. He goes on his revenge spree. And the person responsible for killing his son, he now feels like, I got to kill everybody involved with that person's life.
Oh.
Until I can get that person. Cersei, she's one of the major characters of the show. You know, in her grief, she's like, all right, now I'm angry. Again, anger and having to avenge her child's death, but also turning her attention towards the next child and protecting them and keeping them safe. But she also kind of knows that she's going to lose them because of mm-hmm. that prophecy that she received. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it does deal with a lot of parent grief because, you know, one mom who is not a murderer at all, she sees her son murdered in front of her. That was she murder, you know, because it's changed her. That, like, that instant of seeing her son get killed in front of her, mm-hmm. it changes her right then and there. Now she is, you know, okay with killing someone else. So anyway, Game of Thrones. With parental grief, what is your pack light tip?
So I think that group counseling can be very helpful in this instance. And that's something they tried in Power. They went to like a church group for grieving parents, and it was very helpful for Tasha, and she wanted to open up, but Ghost was like, don't you say nothing.
Mm. But they live a life.
They live a life where she, and she was just like, I just wanted to say I lost, you know, like, I just wanted to say I lost my child or chime in. But she found it to be very helpful, and he was very reserved about what to say. And then also in Collateral Beauty, grief counseling was, you know, like a group grief counseling was very helpful for the wife and for Will Smith. He, like I said, he had an issue with accepting that this incident actually happened, but it was a very helpful process for, you know, many folks on that show. So I would say grief counseling. In Charlotte, there's a group here. I think it's called Kindermorn, and they have some groups for grieving parents and that sort of thing. And I think in most places, you will probably be able to find a grief support group to be in community with people who are in a similar situations. I think, you know, lots of times, you know, being accountable to other people, having people who directly understand the space you're in can be really helpful for your recovery process.
Hmm. Okay. And my pack light tip is to do everything that Nedra said do. Take your time in the grieving process. You know, it is different for everyone, and that includes the length of time. And you do need to take the time to be in it, I think. And also be looking for people who you can relate to, who you can speak with and support you. And you can support. Sometimes having a goal or something like of helping other people can also help you with it. So that type of support group that you mentioned sounds like it would fit that need. But take the time you need to grieve. Understand that, you know, parental grief, again, I haven't experienced this, but from what I have observed, it's something that never goes away, but you can learn to live life and enjoy life and thrive in life and still carry that grief. So you learn ways around to kind of, you know, do those things, right? I mean, you say, like I said, still carry your grief, but is that a good way to say that, you know, as far as you're always grieving, so you are kind of always carrying that grief. Mm-hmm. Right? But mm-hmm. you're carrying it along with other things like mm-hmm. joy and happiness and hope mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, pack light.
Pack light.
Nedra, where can they find you?
I am on Instagram as Kaleidoscope Counseling. I have a website, Kaleidoscope Counseling, PLLC.com. I am a counselor in the Charlotte area. If you need counseling, I have a group practice and we have a lot of wonderful clinicians. If you need a referral, I can refer you as well. Also, I have a planner, the Empowered Planner. The 2019 edition will be out in August. Whoop. And you can grab that on my website. Also on my website, I have tons of free worksheets and blogs and resources to help you on your mental health journey. Follow me on Instagram at Kaleidoscope Counseling for many, many updates and wonderful content. Kendra, your turn.
I am KendraT.the.slp on Instagram and Facebook, my Facebook page. And there I do post about wordplay fun, communication health, and I have a website for some products that I am finishing up and getting ready to start launching, testing, and pre-selling. My website is www.KendraTSays.com. And there I am going to be posting my new book, my first book, Wordplay Crossword Puzzle Book. And that is for the 90s hip hop and R&B and a different world culture enthusiasts like me mm-hmm. and you. Mm-hmm. And also I'm working on an online course to help people with their accents. So I'll have updates on the pre-sale and the launching of that on that website. So check me out.
Follow us on Instagram at Packlight Podcast. Also, remember to review us on Apple, Stitcher, Google, wherever you listen to this podcast. All reviews matter.
And remember, guys, mental health is important. So, pack light.
It's real. Elevated delegant. On another element. And she keep it genuine. Special dedication going out to my...